This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Karen, at the beginning of each episode, for audio reasons, so we all sync up, she leads us in a clap, which sounds kind of religious, because your hands were clasped in prayer. And so I just heard prayer and I got really nervous remembering
sometimes
it.
Yeah. Right before the clap lead that I do, I say a quick prayer to the podcasting patron saint.
It's convenient.
Saint Cecilia.
Yeah, your hands are already in the prayer position through preliminary clap.
Why not ask for a little help before you start?
You know what? There's never not a bad time to ask a little from God.
That's right, Chris.
Yeah.
Well, are you nervous?
I went swimming today. I just wanted to say Jordan pressured me to swim, and I wore a swim cap, which is why I look like I got electrocuted.
Okay.
All right. I was just seeing if maybe you had been swimming.
That's private. I don't reveal any private information on this podcast.
Karen, we're nervous.
We're both incredibly nervous.
I'm nervous because we have a real guest today that I look up to.
That's right.
Yeah.
We're
so I just
excited.
Wanted to get that off my chest, because usually it's all just flippant and we're just talking to our pals, but I haven't met Mike yet. And see, I did the thing where before you introduce someone, you're not supposed to say their name, and I did that shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today, you might know him from his many music albums. You might know him from his podcast network or his podcasts. He's been doing it a while. Please welcome Open Mike Eagle.
Hi, guys. I'm nervous, too, now, because you guys are saying so much nice stuff about me. And
yep.
And I want to, can we just get to the pal thing? Can we just be pals so that we're not nervous?
I think we can do that. There's a setting that I can default to.
Okay.
It's good to see
pals?
You, buddy. It's been a while. Remember
right,
that
yeah.
last party we hung out at?
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Remember,
that
when
was...
remember when we swam earlier?
Oh, man.
That was fun swimming.
Hey, next time, let's not wear the swim caps, huh?
You're right. You're right. Your hair looks so healthy and good, though.
Oh, it's dry and brittle.
Mm-hmm.
This is just complimentary lighting. I am a big fan of you, Mike, and I am a fan of your entire Project Bloat and
oh,
early
really?
On when I was a kid. Freestyle Fellowship is one of the first. I wouldn't call it comedy rap at all.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think they would be offended.
Yeah, of course. But it was the first album that I'm like, these guys are just riffing. They're mentioning skateboards and I'm laughing a lot. And I know that a lot of it is sarcastic and it spoke to me right away. And and you are a part of that group. I don't know if Project Bloat is still happening, but...
It's still like a collective. We don't meet anymore. We used to have an open mic that ran every Thursday for many, many years, but then a guy got stabbed in it, so it got shut down. But we're still a family. We're still a family.
Yeah. Sometimes families, there's a stabbing. That's it's hard. I wish I hadn't said that. Karen, you want to take over here?
You're seating the floor after that.
Yeah. You haven't talked for a bit. I made that lighthearted stabbing joke. Now you go.
I'm going to ask the question because I've only known you from, known of you. I met you when you were at Bridgetown.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was really a good year. Yeah. And it was when I was with Drennan Davis and it was the last night party. And it was one of those things where it was like, he was like, hey, I want you to meet my friend. And then I turned around and I was like, who's this? And you're just kind of like, what's up? And it was like, these are the people that are doing music at Bridgetown.
Yeah.
It was that vibe where I was like, comedy music, like as kind of Chris was saying, it's like, it's not the greatest label. So then you don't want to like be the person that's like, I'm the guitar comic that's on 8th because you know what I mean? Like you don't want to. But then suddenly I was like, hey, I'll be in this group if this guy's in it. Sounds good to me.
Oh, yeah. It makes me nervous all the time. I lose my credibility in rap music a few times a year because I do funny stuff. You know, it's rough. That's why I really wasn't prepared to hear about like Freestyle Fellowship and stuff. Like, wait a minute. No, you can't bring that up right now. And this is two different worlds.
Don't let them see.
And oddly, when I bring that up, I stump most current fans of hip hop. I admittedly don't follow. I'm an early 90s hip hop guy and I like that and hieroglyphics and everything because it was in skateboard videos. That's kind of how I got introduced to it. So.
That's real. Yeah. I mean, there's an underground access point for a lot of people that had to do with stuff like, you know, skateboard videos. I think like Lance Bangs was doing a bunch of that stuff. And like, yeah, a lot of people were brought together that way, kind of representing this kind of worldwide underground thing, you know, like even stuff like Tony Hawk, the video game, like the underground songs that they would put in that stuff. Like that was the way a lot of people got on to a lot of artists.
Yeah. Yeah, it was huge for a lot of bands and skateboarding. All of a sudden, there's regular people playing that game.
Mm-hmm.
I call them regular people, those that don't skateboard.
Right.
All these reggies are out there.
Mike, have you ever skateboarded?
I've tried. It's not good. I'm not good with wheels. Like I'm okay with a car, but like when you put wheels on your feet, mm-hmm. it usually doesn't work very well for me.
Yeah.
Specifically Heelys. I don't know if you, I'm pretty good with wheels on my feet, but if you actually put them on my feet, I become some old timey slapstick comedy.
Sometimes if I pumice my heels too much and then moisturize my feet, it's like I have wheels on my feet trying to walk across tile.
They're like slidey feet. That sounds fun.
You have wheels for like 45 minutes. Oh, you have to just watch TV.
That's a good floor too. You got like no spaces between the tiles. It's all real smooth.
It's like a fucking museum in here. It's unbelievable.
It's like marble.
Very dangerous.
I mean... When I said comedy rap, I take it back. I can't stop thinking of those commercials where they're pumice stoning dry skin off a heel. And what that does, it makes my mouth water in a way where I'm not hungry, but ready to vomit. Anyway, I mean that when I listen, you're doing stand up while intertwined with rapping.
I've done that. It's funny. I did that like five times, you know, and then sometimes during my like I have songs in my live show when I do like a concert that like I have a little bit before the song, you know, but I respect stand up so much. Like I'm around a lot of comics and like I know the amount of reps it takes to like be serious as a comic. So like, I never call myself that. Like I end up, you know, being put in that category and I don't mind it at all, but I never call myself a stand up because like, I'm not willing to go and bomb for 6 years. You know, I'm not gonna, you know? So I don't know. Like I definitely borrow some, and I love performing on shows with stand-ups. But it's mostly because I really like how comedy audiences listen. Like, that's what really did it for me the first time I performed in front of a comedy audience. I was like, oh my gosh, like, these people they're laughing where I put the punchline. Like, they listened to what I said, yeah, and they found it funny and reacted. And like, I was used to performing for rap audiences where they, surprisingly, they didn't listen much.
Yeah, they're just listening for the flow, or
yeah, or just vibing with the beat, or just, yeah, putting their hands up when you tell them to. But yeah, they're not really, like, you know, they're not engaged in your, you know, the way you've crafted a verse.
Yeah, yeah. Which is what I always have appreciated with I like wordplay.
Yeah,
I like turns of phrases. I like cadence. And you would do all that. It's great.
Well, also, isn't it like in live shows, am I right to assume that maybe the goal is to get them to be quieter, start paying actual attention to what you're like, to the wordplay or to the flow? I don't want to use technical terms. I don't really know. But like that idea that, like, actually, as opposed to kind of the big party feel, if people are going like, whoa, 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 actually, like, following the lyrics.
Like, is that the goal, like at a music show?
Yeah, or like that, you know, when you're saying like rap audiences can not be particularly listeners as opposed to stand-up audiences, mm-hmm, is there a moment in like at some rap shows where you can actually hook them into being like listening to the words like that?
Yes, I think a big difference is this, though. When that typically happens in a rap show, like, you typically already have those people captivated in a sense, because they've come to see you, or if I'm opening, they've come to see who the headliner is, but they're prepared to engage with some music that they already know, and you would assume, I would assume, me being booked, there's some inclination that they might be into my stuff as well. So, like, right, there's certain moments I can create where, like, yeah, people are paying attention now. But like, the difference in comedy audiences is, like, around the world, people will go to a comedy club and have no idea who's going to be there. They, yeah, just want to go and sit and laugh, and it doesn't even matter.
For, like, general entertainment, yeah, I enjoy laughing. Let's go, exactly, to the laugh have place. Nice,
let's go to the laugh, yeah, place. Exactly.
Yeah. Drink some beers.
Nobody wants to go to the rap place where they don't know anybody.
Sure.
Who's rapping. That's, yeah, terrible. Yeah. And because of that, if you're in a situation where you're rapping for people who aren't necessarily fans of what you're doing, there, it is a little harder to create that moment of like, okay, here's what I'm doing, are you gonna get with it or not, you know?
Yeah, and could join the build of it. Mm-hmm. I was watching your Tiny Desk concert, which was amazing.
Thank you.
But there's the first song you did the first verse, and then you went, how are you doing this afternoon? And then run right into the second verse. Like, it sounded sincere, and there was not one moment for even people to clap or do anything in the room. It was so, it made me laugh out loud.
Is that really the, that's the series that's like in a bookstore, right?
It's in the corner of an office at NPR.
Okay.
But the funny thing about it is, this is a really big ass room, but the way, yeah, they shoot it, it makes it look like it's in a corner somewhere. It was so funny.
That's great.
So funny. It's all,
and it's also a little bit, was that like nerve-wracking? Because it feels to me like it's so pared down at the, it's almost just like, it's, you're either going to do it or you're not going to do it in that moment.
Yeah. It's challenging as a rapper, because like, okay, I'm very used to performing with beats and having like a monitor so I can hear what I'm saying back at me over the beat. But they don't allow any of that. Like, there was no amplification of anything allowed. So, like, I'm trying to hear myself over these musicians who I'm, like, not very used to playing with. It was challenging. But I also have learned that if you're rich, they let you do whatever you want. So, yeah. But I didn't have those privileges, but I've learned it. Okay, you know, yeah, maybe one day I'll be able to have a monitor type desk.
Yet and that also applies to everything else. Yeah, sorry. It applies to all things.
Yeah,
in life,
yeah.
Actually,
yeah, it was one of those lessons. It was one of those lessons.
Hey, yeah, that's funny because that set started with a trumpet, right?
Yeah.
So like it must have been kind of loud and
yeah,
something
was.
To adjust to. Yeah,
it was, and we practiced a lot and everything, but I think it was just like this stark realization we got there that like. Oh, they were serious. I'm not going to have a monitor. Like they really meant that. Like, no, you just have to be able to hear yourself in some way that sounds impossible to me.
It almost feels like a musician test when I watch people where, you know, like being able to do it without hearing yourself and sometimes being drowned out is. I mean, that's a real like it's a game show for musicians. Essentially,
yeah, it's not
like,
easy. And there's a lot to lose.
With that NPR crowd.
Yeah, well,
bye.
Hey.
Goodbye.
Hey.
How was your quarantine, Mike?
Yeah.
Gosh, it was so many things. So, I moved into an apartment. And then, like, 3 days after moving into an apartment, I went on a tour. And in the middle of the tour is when everything shut down. And so, like, my world had just changed, and then I went on this tour, and then that stopped, and then all of the plans, like, all of the income, everything, like, crashed, like, really quick. And there were a couple of moments where they were just, like, really dire last spring. But the first thing that happens is I started doing a fake radio show on my Instagram every day. We called it Quarantine Drive Time Radio, and we did it every Monday through Friday from like April to December. And like it galvanized this like group of people, because the whole reason we were doing it originally was I was watching people lose their minds because they didn't know what day it was.
Yeah.
And being a musician, I was used to never knowing what day it was.
Yeah.
So I made myself a shepherd of reminding people what day it is. And we built the radio show every day around like what day it was. And we made this really, really dope community. And then it ended up like turning into like it's not quite like a fan club for me, but definitely like a galvanized support group where I could just like take stuff and show people stuff. And I don't know. And it really helped me a lot. And then, luckily, I had the podcast recorded that I started my network with. I had that done before the lockdown, and my album that came out last year was done before the lockdown. So it was just about like, luckily, I wasn't in a position where I had to try to figure out how to make something. There's my neighborhood. There it is.
There we go. That's
yes.
It.
Boom, boom.
Mm-hmm. On cue. And like, luckily, I didn't have to figure out how to make stuff. I just had to figure out how to put stuff out. Like, that was the big challenge for me, because all of the typical pathways for getting stuff out to people were broken.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the press stuff, the distro stuff, everything was broken. So, like, I had to take a gamble on when to execute stuff. But everything just kind of ended up working out okay.
Did you do Zoom shows and drive-in movie car shows like I did?
I did both of those. I did. I learned pretty early on that the Zoom shows were not going to work for me.
Yeah, I know. I just kept doing them.
I had to stop at some point because, I don't know, I learned a lot about what I get out of performing last year, because I wasn't getting it when I performed. And I just felt empty and dead every time.
Yep.
Like I'd,
for 2 days.
Yeah. It was like a hangover. It was terrible.
Yeah.
So I learned the Zoom shows wouldn't work for me. Those were excruciating. I ended up going on a drive-in tour with Hannibal Buress last September, where he was doing, you know, his act, and I was an opening act on that tour.
So that has to be a great audience that's receptive to suddenly seeing hip hop, right?
Except that they're 50 feet away from the stage,
mm-hmm. right?
In cars.
In cars.
And when they applaud, as we assume they were doing, couldn't hear anything.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
See, I did it on a hot night, and you could hear windows were rolled down. They were being a little loosey-goosey, and they were trying to honk like beep, beep, beep. It wasn't laying on horns, which would trouble me. It was like little spurts of honk. They have to be good honkers.
So Hannibal's tour, I think they thought they were getting ahead of it, and they had a lot of signage and instructions on the big screens around every show that said, "Don't honk."
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that yes. changes.
So people were, when instructed to or when they felt compelled to react, yeah. they would try to yell at the top of their lungs or try to clap, and it was lost.
Well, I understand someone saying no honking, because in traffic it means, hey, do you want to fight?
Yeah.
But what I didn't expect, the Improv did these drive-in shows in Irvine, and right away I was like, oh, this, I need it. I like it already. It took a minute. It's weird to have a bunch of cars honking, but I immediately loved it, and I couldn't have predicted liking that. I understand someone making a no-honk rule, but it worked. It works.
Yeah, I think in retrospect, we could have used some of the honks.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have told them not to honk at all.
It buoyed you as you perform. Oh, well, we did, Chris and I did the same Zoom show one night because people were playing like Quiplash games, you know, like, and doing those comedy shows. And it felt like it wasn't just like, oh, we all wrote a joke for this phrase and everybody liked that person's more, which is a pretty hilarious thing to put yourself through when you're already kind of like isolated and questioning your entire life.
Suddenly you're in a competition suddenly.
You're in a competition and then you start hating everyone. Oh, and you're like, this is a dumb game that we all came together to play just for fun and to do something. And now it's like, I'm super competitive and like, that wasn't fucking funny. And you're a hack. And like, it brought out in me all of the things that I was trying to escape from doing the show in the first place. And I was just like, this is very ironic that I am this, like, I feel lonelier and worse and angry as I get off this stupid game that's just to bring people together.
Because you're alone in your apartment, yet at the same time, you're at a judgy high school party.
Yes.
Where everyone's like, being categorized. Yeah. Yeah. It was
I got to say that those, though, because I did Quiplash stuff like a couple of times, those are probably the best of my Zoom experiences, because really what it came down to for me was my performance setup is like very like technical. It's a lot of like beat machines and stuff, and there is just no accounting for, like, if I press a button over here, there's no accounting for what people hear over the internet. There's nothing I can do to ensure that the sound people hear is what I want to hear what I am hearing. And that's what would drive me up a wall.
That's horrifying.
I'm putting out, you know, the energy I'm trying to put out in a song, and the music that I put out last year in specific was like very emotional. And then to, like, you know, I'd get these texts afterwards from people who knew me, like, oh, the sound was messed up like half of the set. Like, oh, that's wonderful. Fantastic.
You're like, was my heart messed up as I stuck it out there for fucking everyone in my whole life?
Oh, man. Yeah. You felt pitiful. A lot of those performances felt genuinely pitiful.
And that album is, are you talking about the trauma divorce?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What's it called? Sorry.
Anime Trauma and Divorce.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you were finished with that before quarantine, but then you felt you have to promote it and put it out there at a weird time.
Yeah, it was.
Did you find it fit well? Because I watched something else and you were talking about how it was more personal. Did it help that we were all going through a weird time almost?
I think it certainly helped the project resonate with people.
Yeah,
I think it did at a lot of moments. It felt very like self-centered trying to promote it, you know, like it was already felt kind of gross anyway, because it's like all personal and I'm trying to sell it, you know. Yeah. I'm trying to like point people to it and get engagement around it and all of that robotic stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, then on top of that, like, people are going through really real stuff. People are dying, people are losing jobs, and you know, it's like, yeah, here I come with my bullshit. You know,
yeah.
it didn't seem like the best timing, but I think some of it did resonate with people because it was such a dark time.
Yeah, I was going through a similar, like, when my special came out that I felt I needed to tell people. Meanwhile, everyone's marching on my street for something way more important than my comedy special. And I'm like, I'm not saying shit. I'll let it sit out there for a little while and then maybe occasionally mention it. But like you said, it a lot of things that we do resonated with people in the past year, and it's worth it. But I'm like you, I'm not going to shove it down people's throat, even though that's part of our jobs.
Yeah. And that's the part that I think is more and more becoming our job as things, you know, everything gets more digital. It becomes us who are the, like, we're the needle movers ultimately, like with our social media on how our products get marketed. And it's kind of just where we are.
Yeah.
When did you already had a pretty steady hip hop career, but when did you start intersecting with comedy? How did that happen? Was that in Chicago?
No, that was in LA. Okay. That first time that I was describing earlier, that first time I performed in front of a comedy crowd, it was at UCB.
Oh, okay.
So I'd like wormed my way into being an ASCAT monologist.
Yeah. I've done that. It's really fun. It's self-indulgent, but it's the best. I love it. Yeah.
And the way I did it, I just like did a couple songs and talked about where the songs came from. And then, you know, they riffed the sketches off of those. And it was just really, it was very just fulfilling for me as a writer to be in that sort of environment. And I just kind of started chasing it from there pretty much. Like the second time I did the ASCAT thing, I made sure I had it videotaped. Cause I used that to try to get on other comedy shows. Like I ended up getting on, Paul F. Tompkins' show at the Largo. Cause I was hounding him with this video. look, it works.
Proof.
And he, you know, he got me on a couple of his shows, and that's really when it started to take root, because then like I started to be like part of the community, you know, like meeting people, and you know, and somebody would invite me on their show and somebody would see that and invite me on there, and like, you know, and that's kind of how it really kind of took hold.
Yeah. And that's a perfect fit, because Largo is the only place I've seen where music and comedy are married and it works. It's so hard to make it work. And it always works there.
That audience has been trained over the years of like, you might, because I've been definitely in the old Largo, used to do those nights where it was like Colin Hay from Men at Work and it's his night and his audience has no interest in comedy. Mm. And you have a half an hour to fill before he's going to walk out there. We were just like, they fucking hate my guts. Like they don't, that's not the plane they want to be on that evening. They're on a full different trajectory. And you're just like, I have some great observations about Sephora, everybody. And they're just like, no, I'm not doing that with you right now. It's nightmarishly hilarious. But it's almost like Flanagan got in there. And of course, with all those people that just kept coming back, like audience and performers, because of course, all musicians want to be comics and all comics want to be musicians. So it was like he just kind of kept going, it's working. It does work. Just keep doing it.
Yeah.
And I think now that audience is like, we're up for what you give
they
us.
Are.
Like
they're
we
down
trust
for whatever.
You. Yeah.
They're down for whatever. And it is a great place for that. Cause I've been on the other side of that too, where like I do music that's too musical on the comedy show and you know, people aren't necessarily you know, into that either, unless they put you at the very end. If they put you at the very end, it works. They put me in the middle, so it can be rough.
I have talked to Chris about this a bunch of times, because I used to do like comedy guitar songs, and
you'll do it again. I'm gonna make you.
There's nothing more painful than like you just finish the first chorus and you can see some fucking blonde 28-year-old staring at you. It's always a blonde guy for me, where there's always just like, no thanks. And you still have, you're just like, why did I write 4 verses in this song? Like, it just, you are trapped in your own fucking idea. Yeah. And it hurts every muscle in my body. Like, that's the thing of the make or break of like when it goes great, that for me, comedy music is like the best cheat in the world because you don't have to do the moment by moment speaking performance. You're just like, and away we go, and everyone's going to go with it. And it's high energy, or it sucks and it slows time down.
It does.
Horrifying.
You get trapped in that. In watching every lyric come out of your own mouth.
This was my idea. So was this. This was my idea too.
Exactly. Oh my God, it can be so excruciating.
Yeah.
What was the reason? Did they give you a reason when Comedy Central canceled the new Negroes? See, God, I said it and I don't. Did they cancel it because they were uncomfortable saying that word? Do you think the executives, you know, are like, I can't say this anymore?
It's so funny because, man, that title ended up being such a story on its own. Like, we never could have imagined how much. Like, how much we'd end up having to talk about that.
Really? Like it was splitting the room?
Oh, man. It was from the very first pilot test. It came to our attention that the title was a fucking problem. We ended up having to reshoot part of our pilot to address the title. Like, and that didn't really work either. Because what happened is that we had a title that people would have a reaction on, and they wouldn't, if they had a negative reaction, they wouldn't go watch the show to see whether or not the title gets explained. They were just out.
Yeah.
And they were just telling other people to be out
on Twitter. Yeah. Upon reading it the first time, all I had to do was hear it said in Baron Vaughn's voice, and I'm like, Oh, okay. Yeah. I know what this is.
You know, also, you had to watch that trailer where it's just like kick-ass comic after kick-ass comic after kick-ass musician, where you're just like, Lizzo was on that show, right?
Yep.
I was just like, these bookings are very high level. They're not your average Comedy Central show bookings at all.
No.
It was amazing.
And they didn't know how to really deal with any of that either. They didn't really know how to take advantage of the fact that we were able to like get Lizzo like, you know, like a week before she was like a worldwide superstar.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
wow.
Right. You know, they didn't really know how to. But,
well, of course they don't know. They're all just 25-year-old executives.
But there
Sorry.
Was stuff we
That's
didn't
my
know,
opinion.
Too. There was stuff we didn't know, too, honestly.
Yeah.
And like even like getting Lizzo, like the way we got Lizzo, because she was signed to a major label. So like major labels typically don't let their artists do music that they don't own. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like that's why they sign people to the really expensive contracts. So to get Lizzo, for instance, we had to have her giant record label Atlantic sign a waiver that they weren't going to mess with us about doing this song. But what that meant was nobody in her world was going to really acknowledge it at all. Like it didn't exist. And they went one step further and like got it taken off of some very important playlists.
Wow.
Because they aggressively did not want it to exist because they weren't making money from it.
Did she kind of blow up sometime in between taping that and when it was going to air?
Yeah, she was already like popping when we taped it.
But yeah.
I think our episode with her maybe aired in May, and in like by June, she was everywhere. She was absolutely everywhere.
I wonder if that was right before she did that Coachella, that like it was almost like people had been saying the name, and then she blew doors at Coachella in a way where people just couldn't.
That
stop
sounds. That
about
sounds
it.
About right.
Yeah,
that sounds about right. Like the next thing I remember is like she was half naked at the Lakers game. You know, it was like the next thing. Like,
she was so ready.
Yeah.
So I think the story now is that you and Baron broke Lizzo and actually are responsible.
I like that story.
Her world.
That's what I'm reading.
I like that
story. That's what I would do.
I'll take the social cred percentage points, you know, however that deal gets brokered.
The back end of Lizzo's career. Like a girl.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I'll go ahead. That's fine. Was that an audition thing where you just met Baron for the first time, or were you already pals with him?
Yeah, we had been working together for years, and New Negroes was his concept that he built at Bridgetown. He was doing it there, I think, going back to like 2014, 15, something like that. And then he brought me on to that, and we started doing it at different festivals around the country, and we started doing it as a monthly here in L.A. And along that route, it developed as a TV concept as well. So we
did you do that at Meltdown? Was that a Meltdown show?
I don't think it was. No, we did it. We did it we did it at UCB for like 2 years, and then we did it at this place.
Virgil.
Yes, the Virgil. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I 100% remember it at UCB because they used to have stand up there. There was that used to be a hang. It's still there, right? The one
is
across
UCB still there?
The Scientology one?
The second one's gone. Yeah, right? The second one's closed down. I do believe the first one's there. I just don't know if it's not open, is it? I don't think it's open.
I don't know.
Gosh, should we go down there tonight?
Yeah, let's go.
It's time to reopen.
Let's egg it. Well, that was just my idea. Sorry, that was just my idea. I don't know.
I was just going to ask, in all of this then, was it after your Drive Time radio show that you started thinking about doing a podcast network? Or how did that come into play?
So I had the podcast, the flagship show, that was all taped. And so I had made the deal for the network all in a year prior. The show that's the flagship show is called What Had Happened Was, where I sit down with like a hip hop legend for a season and interview them about, you know, their big projects. So that was a podcast that I had piloted at another network, and they ended up passing on it, but reverting the rights back to me. And I just really, it's like the kind of thing where I knew that the concept would hit based on the people who love that music. And even though they didn't see the value in it, they didn't see how they could sell ads on it, I knew like, oh no, this could be something. So then I had the invitation to start a network with Starburns, and took it over there, and we kind of built our thing together from there.
So awesome.
Yeah, that's
I remember you tweeting about that, and it was probably like, it was probably 2 years after we started our network.
Right.
Where I was just like, I was, you know, I think I said congratulations to you or whatever, but what I really wanted to say is like, get ready. Get ready.
Yeah.
This seems like, it's a real thing, you know what I mean?
Is.
It's like, but it's such a great, I mean, for me personally, it's such a thrill to be in this business because it's like, it's kind of cutting edge. It's definitely different than everything we've done before and every kind of way things have been done before. And it just feels like it's the one area of show business where creators really can have the agency and control.
Yeah, you don't have to ask anybody anything.
Right.
Like as long as you can press record, you know, like can literally do whatever you want. And if you believe in something, you can make it and try to sell it. And yeah, I mean, there's just no upper limit to the options you have as a creator in this field. I'm still trying to figure it out, though. Like, I still don't know how any of this shit works business wise. But like, but, you know, it's certainly fun so far. And I've assembled like a collection of shows that I really, really believe in a lot. So we'll kind of see where it goes from here.
Yeah.
When you started by, were you kind of making fun of Drive Time Radio, like the kind of radio you have to do at 6 a.m. to promote something? Because that's Karen. That's our favorite game. Welcome back to the Bean and the Dumb Girl. Oh, did you watch that game? Oh,
no, I don't know. I don't know how to watch.
All right, be quiet. Oh, we got the freeway connection coming up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a guy. I'm a Chicago kid, and I grew up listening to Man Cow. So, like, I have a special place in my heart for that stuff. But yeah. I didn't riff on that theme so much as I just like wanted to program an hour.
Sure.
You know, so like I just kind of rolled with the Drive Time name for that.
But yeah, it would have been a mistake to jokingly mimic it. I know that. That's
no
why
one wants it. No one wants it.
That's what I want to do is all. That's all. And so it's just coincidence that is Baron Vaughn a Chicago comic?
No, he is from Las Vegas originally.
Oh, wow. Okay, I knew
God,
that.
That's, but Baron, that's so Baron Vaughn to be from Las Vegas.
It's that like not a real place at all. Yeah. It's not a place to be from.
With his sleight of hand shuffling.
That is so Property Brothers of him to be from Las Vegas. That's insane.
Oh, my God. The what I performed in Vegas opening for Daniel Tosh, and Hannibal did a guest set. And the... We turn and the Property Brothers, I didn't know anything about them, but they were both in there with their shoulders were touching and they kind of hovered into the room. Do you want to play, Danny? And they both had these girlfriends that looked like sisters, really. And I backed out of the room. I couldn't. I remember Hannibal and I were both freaked out by the Property Brothers. They were like the
VIPs at the comedy show.
That's
And they came in and Daniel made fun of them and said they slept in a bunk bed and then they left. It was like a. But Hannibal was there. He was in the room.
Yeah, they bought the place, fired him.
Yeah, yeah.
Fired themselves.
Yeah. Well, that's probably why I haven't worked there since. They own the Mirage, or whatever it was. That's fine. But yeah, I just assume Hannibal's Chicago. I wondered if you were in the comedy scene back then, but it's interesting that you stumbled on it at UCB. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was just a fan of comedy before that, really. And I'd always been like a huge fan of it, but I never realistically thought that there was a way I'd be connected to it at all as a youth.
Yeah. Well, it just made me think because Chris and I have talked a lot on this show which before quarantine, I think we were both very like, you know, happy, grateful or whatever for like comedy festivals and those kinds of comedy hangs where you, and during quarantine and doing this show, we talk about it like it was pure heaven. Like, remember that one year at Bridgetown when you put a refrigerator box on and you fought yourself in the street where it's like, like these hilarious memories, which I think I have always taken for granted because comedy's like, I was always a fan and I loved it. And then I got to do it. And then like I was in it for the hanging out.
Yeah.
Like I was always like, well, I can do a set, but it seems like the audience, I don't know. Like it always seemed hard, but it was the hangout part was so worth it that just the festival element or like the culture and the community vibe of comedy is just so like enlivening.
It is.
And I never appreciated it like I did sitting in my house alone for a year and a half, where it's just like, God, that really is a very nurturing thing. It like gives you a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. So I was talking about, I was on a tour last year and the world shut down in the middle of the tour. And, you know, the first way that I knew that shit was real was that they canceled South by Southwest. I was like, because that never fucking, like, people die at South by Southwest and they keep it going.
Yeah,
like, cars, people get kidnapped, they fucking do
Karen
it.
Karen was,
I was on that street when that happened.
Oh my God.
The
car
standing feet from the people that got
I was
run
last
over.
In line and then I walked away going, I'm not going to wait for X when I can hear them right here. And then the car turned up the street.
Holy cow. Yeah. I was on a tour and we were driving into Austin as that happened. Like, that was. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
crazy.
You know, I talk about that South by being canceled usually because that was like I was going to make a lot of money down there doing a bunch of things. And so like it was a big blow to me financially. But I also know in my heart that I was set on that Sixth Street experience.
Yeah.
With like in my world, that's like the comedians. The musicians, like, it's always such a hang, and it's like an epic hang. It's like a
that's
like
where
you
I
said,
started.
Use the word nurturing. Like, it's that kind of thing where, like, I got buddies of mine that I still pick on about stuff they did in the green room of Southwest, like 2 years ago. You know, but you're spot on about that. Like, that's a big part of what's been missing, and. Coming from especially like underground rap, like we don't have that. We really don't have that. There's not enough success in it for there to be that sort of community. Like we don't have events where we all come together typically. So finding that community in the comedy world has been like secretly big for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's lovely.
You find it way more like a friend group and nurturing among other comics and everything that maybe isn't in the hip hop scene.
100%. Because there's. It's just hard to like. There's luminaries in independent hip hop, but it's we're very rarely all brought together for any reason. Like everybody's kind of scrapping and scraping by on their own, and people are doing their own gigs, and it's just not very often that we're able to experience each other. Where you know in comedy, like you know, we did New Negroes once a month at UCB. The Green Room was a community hang.
Yeah.
Like
yep.
People, all sorts of people that weren't on the show would just come hang out.
Yeah.
Like yep. that's I don't get that from the hip hop world. Like I just at least my station in it, that wasn't something that was able to happen.
Well, hip hop is supposed to be competitive for some reason. There's always this like you're in a battle with the next or no, I'm not talking about battle rapping or whatever.
Just, you know, just the ego thing. But it's funny. Yeah. I experienced that in comedy as well. You know, everybody's trying
Jesus
to
be, Christ. That's yeah. all it is in yeah. comedy.
Yeah. I don't, I guess.
But it's funnier. It's funnier. There's a way to hang with it.
Mm-hmm. I never, if someone's, I don't put up with a lot. Maybe I'm not, I don't know. It seems like, I just don't like roast type battle
that energy.
Comedy. Yeah. And that, of course, done better is a battle rap, because you also have to rhyme. Usually, I don't know. It's just that whole element. I just want to be friends, you guys.
Yeah, me too, man. I bring the friend vibes too, in both worlds. I'm not roasting nobody. I'm not battling anybody.
Yeah, do you not? You're probably good at battle rapping, but you.
Yeah, I came up. That was my start in rap, was battling. I did battles before I ever even wrote songs. Like, that's just.
Did you always feel bad? I would feel bad, even if it was a good joke or a funny rhyme. Oh, I would feel bad.
As a young person, I was ruthless. I remember somebody reminded me once, because we had a friend group in my high school, and we were all like the rapper, break dancer, graffiti guys. Everybody knew we rapped. And it was one day where like, we were just like on the train in Chicago, like battling our female friends. Just bad, like for no reason. And somebody told me something awful I said about one of them. And I was like, God, that's terrible. But then I thought about it. And I remember at that moment, I was so pleased that I came up with this clever, awful thing to say, you know, but that was just, I don't know, that was the only thing I cared about at the time.
Yeah, it's the name of the game. I mean, like, it's almost like, it's just it's high level wordplay and then kind of like social bravery, because it's like, I'm about to ream you right now. And I also know you're going to try to do the same thing to me. Mm-hmm. And I trust myself that I can think of like the metaphor that's actually going to be funny, accurate. You know, it's that those accurate ones are the greatest when you, you know, whatever. But yeah, that's I very much relate to, like, if it's a great insult, then hurt feelings be damned, because look at my accomplishment. Yeah. Like, that's my entire life.
I'm not proud about how specifically mean I know I can be. It doesn't feel good.
Yeah. I certainly could not, like, the things I used to say in battles back then, I don't think I'd have the energy to do stuff like that now at all. I don't think I'd be able to look myself in the mirror and say mean rhyming things to people the way that I used to very easily.
It gets you. It's an engine. It gets you places. You know you can do it. Then you have it in your back pocket, but you don't. Better to not use than use. But yeah, that's kind of maybe I always think of Bridgetown in that the year where there, it was like in the after party was in a warehouse area. So you kind of had to like travel there, and it seemed like it had a real Mad Max feel to it, where you're just like, sorry, are we going to walk out of here at 3 a.m.? Like, where are
they? Did they have like a dirt floor or something too? I remember what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's different.
Yeah.
I just remember the one year I went where famously I was in a car. Everyone had done mushrooms, and I jokingly said, because we were just going around that, go down this street on the railroad tracks. I announced that there was railroad tracks, and this car drove on the railroad tracks, high centered, on the railroad ties, and then we were stuck. And I looked down, and it's an active down the tracks. There was lights blinking and everything.
Yep.
I was on mushrooms too. All high.
Thank you for being honest.
I took a lot of them, you guys. Anyway, but I calmly, without panicking, in a way I think I would have panicked more if I was sober, found the party, grabbed 15 people, and brought them back to the car, and we lifted the car.
Oh my God.
Swiveled enough of the car off the tracks to where it just kind of pinned the wheels. So made the matter worse. And the cops came and they had guns out. But they were like,
the story is the best.
I'm not kidding. The cops were like, they saw the group. They saw that clearly it was the most eclectic group of people because there was girls in poodle skirts that were in some sketch. You know, it's just like, these are a group of people that are all helping this car. I'm going to put this gun away. And but they had to call the train people and make them stop the train.
Oh, gosh.
And,
Jesus.
Yeah, it was insane. And the next guy, that guy was just, he was driving. He was sober, by the way. He was just driving around. His car was fine. But they had to stop a train. It would have hit the car.
That sounds like a real nightmare on mushrooms. Because then you feel like everything in the world is bad is your fault. Like, on you.
I discovered that, no, just saying the wrong thing in a green room is horrifying on mushrooms. When shit hits the fan, all of a sudden you're at a heightened performance ability. Or that's what I experienced. And then an hour later, I'm jumping in a dumpster. Or whatever. All my stories about being fun at Bridgetown let me know I was an alcoholic. And so during quarantine, I'm like, yeah, maybe I don't need to be doing that stuff, diving into
dumpsters. I don't know, though. I will argue this.
I miss it.
It's a 4-day weekend and you're never going to, you know, you'll see these people again, but they don't care.
Why am I bleeding the next day? Bleeding? Oh, yeah. I was punching that garbage in a dump. I forgot. Well, to make people clap.
That's what it's for.
Yeah.
I remember that same year in the warehouse one, it was like there was something. Oh, it was when someone's manager was trying to DJ instead of April or Chip. And so the music went hay fucking wire. It was like he was trying to do interesting Radiohead B-sides on the dance floor where everyone's like, what are you doing? Like, you're ruining. And so, of course, everyone's like trying to come on to their drugs or whatever. So I went outside because I'm starting to get too much of that anxiety of like see and be seen, where I can do it a little bit for like 10 minutes or say hi. And then suddenly I'm just like, I need to be in a dark corner smoking something or like just being separate and being like those, you know, gothy, whatever. And so Howard Kramer and I were outside smoking and trying to like just be a little bit away. And then we heard that train come because the train was literally behind the warehouse we were in. And so we were stoned out of our minds. And then it was like, in the distance, and I go, Howard, train. And we both just started running and we fucking ran down to watch the train go by. Wow. And it was like that kind of, it was just a very, it like, I love when comedy, because sometimes it can be so painful and so lonely and so like, why am I doing this to myself? Like, what's the end result? But then when you get everybody together that's doing the same thing to themselves and to like let off some steam
in a warehouse,
there's like those moments where you're like, it's the greatest, you know, summer camp vibe or whatever, where it's like truly people having the best time, the best sets, and then like the best party afterwards.
It's amazing that those parties ever end. Cause like that's that, like we're all fighting for that moment.
Yeah.
You know, we get it. And I'm like, wait a minute. How did people go home? Like, why? Yes. Why did people go home?
It was like Peanuts Gang. There's no parents. We're just dancing in a warehouse.
You're just hoping there's somebody can get at least one Uber to start coming down there. Because that was one thing, too. When it finally did end, it was like 3 a.m. and we're just like, yeah, all the Ubers cost $200 or, you know what I mean? Like, or they won't come to the river district, wherever we are.
Yeah, the warehouse stabbing area. please come pick me up at the stabbing docks.
I love that I figured out yet again another way to like wax poetic about festivals. I really am having like that, like, you know, these are the days of our lives thing about it, where it's like, what's beautiful is, because it feels like it at this point, it's like it's been so long, it feels like it's never gonna happen again.
Yeah,
I'm afraid for it to happen again, even though I want it real bad.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I feel like I'm not going to know what to do with myself.
Yep.
Yes.
Because even though we're all vaccinated, it's like, well, that's not a ticket to just act normal. You can still get this. Yeah, it's hard to know. Are you going on tour? Do you have like dates coming
up? I have dates in September. Yeah. And that whole thing feels weird. Like, you know, I started putting computers together during the damn pandemic. I started like trying to learn how to cook and shit. Yeah. You know what I didn't do? Work on my set.
Yeah.
At all. Nothing new.
Well, of course. I mean, how much of your writing is literally writing it out? If you're anything like me, you have to be doing it on stage. That's more than 50 sets. For me, it's like 80% of my.
Well, you know, I'm typically not quite wired that way. Like
you do write it all out.
Yeah. Everything's all written out. And, you know, I'm always working towards like albums. So if I have some new songs, it's just stuff that I'm trying to refine or, you know, test out. But, you know, most of my work is done at home and I didn't do any. Like I just started making songs like in the last 2 months.
Yeah. Yeah. It was hard to be inspired. Yeah, me too. I got into cooking and making miniature houses and stuff and golf and things that don't help my career at all.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, I'm 17 again.
Mike, when you have your first set again, don't forget your great line from the Tiny Desk concert. How's everyone doing this afternoon? Don't forget. You've written on the fly before. I'm just saying there's bits waiting for you.
Because it might not be. It probably won't be afternoon at that point. So I can't. Right? I can't say that line exactly.
No, you got to bank on it. Line. That's the joke. That's the good part.
Do you know what my favorite line that I said that day was? Is that it smells like so many different kinds of soup in here. Because it did. It did. Everybody was eating their lunch while we were fucking performing. It was great.
That is a set that looks like it would smell like soup.
It did. NPR. You imagine just soups.
Soups in mugs. Quiet soup. Exactly. Sips of soup.
NPR's logo should just be a steaming mug of anything.
100%.
God, I can't wait for live shows again. Wait, so you're going on tour? Because I saw that you're going to play at the Echoplex, right?
I am, yeah.
Oh, that's down my street.
Yeah. I missed that place, too. It's just in my head, it's a really giant cavern, and I don't know how we're going to find enough people to put in it.
Can we get tickets?
Of course.
I tried to go on the website, and I couldn't figure it out.
I'm just happy to hear they're opening, because it's been boarded up. Everything else in Echo Park seems to have opened up to a point that makes me uncomfortable, but I'm willing to risk it to go to the Echo or the Echoplex. Yeah.
Yeah.
I miss those places so much. Like, such a formative part of my, like, L.A. performing experience. Like, it's like, wow, I don't even know. Yeah, it's going to be interesting for me in 2021 to intersect with that place again, just even see what that feels like.
And when you're on tour, are you do you you're in a bus or are you separate flying, or is it like a big old group touring around?
Every time it's different, and we haven't worked out all the travel details of this one, but I think there's only going to be like 5 people total performing. So we're probably going to try to do like a minivan situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole like the old school traditional drive all day thing and get there and sound check, that sort of thing. Like, I've done the bus thing a few times when I've like opened for bigger acts. That shit is incredible.
Someone driving you.
Well, it's not even just it's the time, like, because when you do the bus, you all load up the bus after the show. And then the bus, you know, like the driver's been sleeping all day. So you just drive all night to the next town. You wake up, you're there already.
Yeah.
You can actually like enjoy the city. You can get a bagel. You can walk around the town square. Like, you can do all of this stuff that like we never get to do. Like, we never get to experience a place when we drive all day.
Yeah.
When we get there, it's like time to work. So if we're lucky, we get to even like stop at the hotel. But typically, we don't get to enjoy it much.
Yeah, it's funny how much of tour. I'm going to Portland that next month, and I'm nervous for a number of reasons. But I sometimes don't look forward to doing stand up, and then I arrive there, and I'm like, oh, this is great. I just don't look forward to flying. I don't like the travel logistics. That's what I never will look forward to. If you could take that away, it would be the best. I need to get a bus is what I'm saying.
I love the idea. I have always like had a very romantic notion of the bus because first of all, to me, it's still like what musicians
yeah,
do it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it like I love the idea of keeping everybody together because it's the same festival vibe.
Yeah.
But it is like, you know, whether it's business or you're just watching TV or bored or whatever, but you're still kind of, it's like still the group hang.
It
which
is.
Which I think is like, that's so fun.
Wait, do you sleep in bunks?
You sleep in like fucking coffins, man.
That's summer camp too. That's great.
Yeah. It's tight. It really is dope. Like it really is dope. Like that common area, like during the drive and like, you know, somebody's playing beats or somebody's playing PlayStation and, you know, like, you know, it is the communal thing and it's on wheels and you know, you're just waiting to stop and get a coffee somewhere and get back on the bus. Like it's just really nice.
Yeah.
Really nice. That's the good shit.
Is there any plans to ever do more Project Bloat stuff like with AC Alone and those guys? Do you talk to them? Are they your friends?
We get together at least once a year. We have an anniversary party / show that we do over here in Leimert Park. There's always like the biggest, dopest like family reunion every year. And there's some I talk to more than others. Like I talk to Abstract Root a lot and Micah Nine a lot. You know, like and those are just like my big homies, and I'll do whatever, anything they ask me anytime, I'll do.
See, but, yeah,
I love those guys.
I nerd out so much thinking about you being friends with them because, like I said, that and the Far Side and you know, that everything, that 1993 era of me loving all that stuff. It's,
did you see Gift of Gab passed away today? Did you see that?
I did not see that.
Yeah, he did. Blackalicious's Gift of Gab passed away today.
Yeah, I love Blackalicious.
Yeah, they're amazing. He was an incredible writer and rapper, you know, so rest in peace.
Gone
too soon, like so many others.
So many others this year.
It's been really bad.
Yeah.
It's been really
bad. It has been. Yeah. It has been. That's why I think live performance experiences for both the performers and for the audiences are going to be so important.
It is.
Like, these are the feelings people, you know, like, want to get when they go to those shows. It's people are needing full-on injections of, like, positive, up, you know, kind of like high vibe energy because it's just been like a series of surprise, terrible early deaths or just shock or just the fucking the after effect of the Trump chaos where every day I was just like, this can't go anywhere but so much. What, like, we're going to spin out, like this is all getting so insane. And it's like, we all finally landed, rested. Now we're all kind of like coming to terms.
Yeah.
And then it's like people need escape.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it's teed up so nicely for big shit, like
good time.
Big shit at the Echoplex.
Big shit.
I want to stand in the Echoplex and listen to people fucking scream at the top of their lungs.
Yeah,
That's what I want. Real
bad. Making out with wallpaper. Or each other.
Punch the garbage.
God. I can't wait to get into another trash can and dance with wood with nails in it. When are you doing that show? Or when is that?
That's in September. The date on that one is September, I think, 18th?
Well, I'm going to be there, and so is Karen. Karen, you're coming?
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, it's the 19th. I'm sorry. So it's the 19th.
What's your website name? I mean, we might as well do these conclusionary things.
Oh, yeah. Is there any last topic that we haven't hit upon
or
like that you'd like to discuss?
I didn't have nothing in mind.
Sure.
I'm just rolling with the breeze.
Well, I hope we were windy enough.
A lot of wind. That's the one thing we can't guarantee.
Yeah, you're the coolest and nice, and it was really cool to have you on.
Oh man, it's my pleasure. It's great to talk to y'all.
Yeah, you know? Tell AC Alone hi for me.
Oh, okay. Don't do it.
No, don't. I don't know whether to do it.
I met him once.
Don't pass on any highs. No one gives a shit. He didn't want to talk to me.
He didn't.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Forget about it. And it was at the Virgil. Yeah. You were probably at the Virgil that night. It was like, oh, God. I mean, it was 10 years ago, but it was.
Is it back when they had the when he was doing the weekly over there?
Yeah, it was a series.
Probably was. Yeah, I used to.
Who's the Vermont? The Grouch guy. I don't know. There was a bunch of. I don't know. It was a great night, but yeah, maybe you were there. I don't know.
Probably.
I didn't know you.
I used to be over there as much as I could in that era. I was like helping them put that on and like doing design stuff and all of that. Man, that was that was my part of my formative years here in the city.
Oh, cool. Well,
in the Virgil. With their signature cocktails and their copper mugs to drink things, or just like, really, guys? You're all wearing suspenders? Okay.
Yeah. I love the suspenders and the old timey tapestries behind you. I just
having to walk through the stage to get to the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And the stage, I used to get really self conscious, and I realized this stage is sized down like 1/4. Like, I normally don't walk on a stage in my head brushes the like
it's a Willy Wonka stage. Yeah,
it's a complete it's like a grammar school performance stage.
It is the
I don't like this, it's the
marionette in sync puppetry stage.
It is.
you thought I wouldn't talk about in sync. Maybe it's
you got
me.
It in there. You always have to sneak those assholes in here.
Yeah, I'm always sneaking in the sink. Well, yeah, thanks a lot for being on, Mike.
Of course, thanks for having me.
Terrific. Yeah, that was great. And Mike's podcast network, Stony Island Audio, correct?
Stony Island Audio, yep, that's us.
And your album, again?
With Anime, Trauma, and Divorce.
And that is the most current album?
That is the most recent one, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not pushing there isn't one new? I'm not
Where's
saying
the new
that.
Stuff? God, it seems like you haven't written.
cranking away on it, though. I'm making all sorts of stuff that I can't tell is good or not.
Well, I think I use your words, I think, when I say thank you for fucking with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Delightful.
Delightful indeed. You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYN.
AR.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date. Terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
Mouth horn.
With Karen and Chris.
I was just trying to show off mouth horn to Mike. I'm pretty good at mouth horn.